This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, money nerds. That's the best compliment a guy can give, isn't it? Hey, we got a great show for you today. Ever wonder why you aren't making enough money? Today, we tackle that and answer your call for help. On today's show, please welcome from Afford Anything, Paula Pant. And from LenPenzo.com, that guy John who counts the number of times we say, and to your point. I'm just kidding. To my point, John's busy pointing or something. It's just Len Penzo. And the biggest pointer of all from this here podcast, we welcome OG. And now, because Friday is our favorite F word, or at least the only one that doesn't get Joe's mouth washed out with soap, here he is, Joe Saul Sehy.
Free? Get your mouth washed out with soap? I didn't know that. Hey, everybody, welcome to Friday on Stacky Benjamins. I'm Joe Saul Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And across the card table from me, it is that lovable scamp, OG.
Nice. Okay. What's up, dude?
Hey, just another Friday, and happy to talk to you. We've got two other characters with us, so let's talk to them. In the desert, where she just got back from the Burning Man, it's our good friend Paula Pant from Afford Anything.
I wandered around at Burning Man and ended up here.
Your hair looks normal again. What's up with that?
You know, the weight of having all of those colorful extensions in my hair, it's heavy, dude.
I thought
it looks heavy. Cool, but it's not something that makes you ever want to work out or do yoga or take a shower. It's just like it's many, many, many additional pounds stuck into your scalp.
Sounds like a normal day for OG. Not taking a shower, yeah. Not doing yoga.
Not taking a shower, not doing yoga, not doing anything.
I got to say, though, Paula, to quote my friends in Boston, your hair looked wicked awesome.
Wicked awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's my radical self-expression.
Another guy with wicked awesome hair, both of them, deep under the bunker in Los Angeles, California. It's Mr. Len Penzo.
Hey, Paul, you should do what I do, and that's carry that extra weight around your gut, the beer belly. It's a lot easier.
Yes.
Joe, how are you?
Lower the center of gravity, Len. That's what you do. Just lower the. Isn't that what they tell you? When you're carrying weight, lower the center of gravity and you're good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Lift with your legs.
See the things people have already learned something today.
Yes. You know what else you learned? You're about to learn, Len, is you can save $450 a pretty easy way. You know how?
No, how? Tell me, Joe.
You had to magnify. Wow. That didn't sound set up at all. You had to magnifymoney.com using our link, stackybenjamins.com/magnifymoney. When you're using those things that most people go into their bank and say, what have you got? And they end up with subpar banking features like checking accounts, savings accounts, maybe credit card options, auto loans, whatever it might be. They have nearly everything at magnifymoney.com/magnifymoney for more there.
We're also excited that Stacky Benjamins is supported by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs matches people to your role based on more of who they really are, their skills, interests, and even how open they are to new opportunities. For $50 off your first job post, go to linkedin.com/SB. That's linkedin.com/SB. Terms and conditions apply.
We've got a great show today. We're going to be talking about the reason you're not making more money. Paula's like, it's because I'm sitting here on the Stack Convention show instead of working. But let's get this party started, shall we?
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today comes to us from our friend Kevin. Actually, it's funny, Len, I call Kevin my friend. I feel like I've known Kevin forever because his Out of Your Rut blog has been around forever. I'm not sure if I ever met, you've met Kevin.
I believe I have met Kevin at a FinCon, I think. I know Kevin and I have, like I said, I know he's done a couple guest posts for me way back in the day. I know we go way back. I mean, this is probably, I don't even know, he might even be around longer than me, at least 10 years. So,
yeah. Yep. The Out of Your Rut blog is a really interesting blog. This piece I found fascinating and wanted to get all your takes on it. 11 reasons why you're not making more money. The piece starts out, when the mainstream media grabs a certain negative theme, it's usually more noteworthy than most of us think. One of the apparent contradictions in the current economic expansion has been the notable absence of increasing incomes. Different theories abound, but I've come up with a list of 11 reasons why you're not making more money than you should. After all, with an official unemployment rate trending consistently before 4%, salaries should be rising all over. That's not what's happening, so let's attempt to dig down into why it isn't. Number one, monopsony. Paul, have you ever heard of the word monopsony before?
I have never heard of the word monopsony. I assume it's like playing a game of Monopoly on your Sony Discman.
That's what I thought too, until Kevin explains that basically monopsony happens in wages when a relatively small number of employers collude to suppress payrolls. Investopedia gives us an example, he says, of how this may be playing out in the tech industry. And this is from Investopedia. The technology industry is an example of this type of monopsony. With only a few large tech companies in the market requiring engineers, major players such as Cisco and Oracle have been accused of collusion and choosing not to compete with each other in terms of the wages they offer for technical positions. This suppresses wages so that the major tech companies realize lower operating costs and higher profits. This example illustrates how a group of companies can act as a monopsony. He says, I think it's safe to say this is happening in other industries as well, but there are bigger picture reasons why. Let's stop here on monopsony. Do you think, Len, there's collusion going on between companies when it comes to our wages?
Gosh, you know, that's a tough one. I'm an engineer too. In my niche, I don't think so at all. As a matter of fact, the competition's fierce and people are getting paid for what they're worth. But hey, maybe it is happening in certain other niches. I don't know. If it is, it's illegal, obviously. And I don't know, Joe. It's hard for me to believe that the free market things would work that way. You could collude to hold things down like that.
Do you think maybe, OG, it's just the fact that companies can see more easily what other companies are paying? I mean, it's easier than ever on places like the U.S. Department of Labor Statistics, Glassdoor, for people to see what everybody else is paying and hold the line.
It's kind of an interesting thought. I'm kind of with Len. I'm not sure that that this would work for a very long time, especially not across such a global, diverse area like. Maybe if you live in a small town and it's the paper mill or the lumber mill, you know, the two owners of the companies, you know, are best friends and they duck hunt. Maybe you can kind of collude there. But I think with a big global multinational company, gosh, it's going to be difficult. And then it only takes one person to spill the beans.
Right.
And that's going to get pretty slippery. So I think it's more something about the information is just very public, like you said.
Yeah.
To your point.
Yeah, Paula. That's one on your drinking game list, John, right there.
Woo-hoo. Hold on.
Yes. Paula, to OG's point, did we do it again? Yeah, this is going to be horrible now. Do you think the people are duck hunting, like they're playing duck hunt on Nintendo against each other?
I mean, they could be. Like, we could all time travel back to the 1980s and 90s and we could play old school Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt and Oregon Trail on the original DOS.
Shut up. Are these references you understand?
They certainly are. Carmen Sandiego.
Well, did we finally find the one vein where Paula knows all the references. It's computer game geekery.
Yes, computer games. See, this is the origin of a future nerd.
It took us, what, like 6 years? I feel so good about this.
I missed out on TV and movies and music, but I totally was playing Oregon Trail.
I'm going to start crying.
You died of dysentery.
Isn't Oregon Trail older than you?
I don't know. When was it? All right, Wikipedia time. When was it formed?
Yeah, if only there were some way for us to look this up.
Oregon Trail. Wikipedia, Oregon Trail is a 2,170-mile trail. Geez, thanks, Wikipedia. <That's
right>. Originally following modern off by such Loris
Interstate Clark. 80 and Interstate 84.
While we look up that thrilling thing, let's move on to number two here. So monopsony, it sounds like we're not in love with that theory, but number two, the number of employers is shrinking. We probably all heard the term, Kevin writes, mergers and acquisitions, but is associated mostly with Wall Street. But there's a real situation affects Main Street at least as much. Because of mergers and acquisitions and other factors, the number of potential employers in America has been shrinking steadily for decades. Fewer employers mean less competition for workers and fewer job opportunities. Listen to this. The decline in the number of publicly traded companies. Between 1998 and 2016, the number of publicly traded companies in the U.S. fell by half. 20 years ago, there were more than 7,500 publicly traded companies, and now there's just over 3,600. That's a massive drop in the number of potential employers, especially since they represent some of the highest paying companies. Number two on his list was hospital closures. Hospitals are a major source of employment, not just for doctors and nurses. Yet, despite a dramatic increase in both the population and healthcare spending, the number of hospitals has declined from nearly 7,000 in 1981 to about 5,500 today. The shrinking banking industry between 1987 and 2017, the number of banks in the U.S. has declined from 18,000 to 5,800. That's a decline of nearly 70% in 30 years. Consolidation, he writes, is the order of the day in industries across the economy. Fewer competitors in any given industry means fewer jobs and more downward pressure on wages. One thing that I like, Len, going back to you, you can't argue with statistics. It sounds like he's got some numbers here that, you know, you think maybe things are shrinking.
I was completely shocked. If you'd have asked me if the number of publicly traded companies had declined, let alone declined by half, I would have guessed the total opposite, that they would have went up. But I was wrong. But I will say this. I totally think he's spot on here. And I'll go back to what I'm familiar with, is the industry where I work, the aerospace industry. There were, when I started 30 years ago, oh my gosh, at least a dozen companies I could go to. And my colleagues were hopping companies right and left constantly. I had a buddy, Brian Sullivan. Within a 12-month period, he hopped from the company I was working to a competitor. He came back to my company, and he went back to the competitor. That's in 12 months. And he was getting 20% raises each time he jumped. And, I mean, you can't do that anymore. There's not that many companies out there to do that. So I can totally see this makes complete sense here.
He made four jumps in a 12-month period.
Yes. Yes. And the companies were right down the street from each other. It was incredible, but it bit him in the end. His fourth jump was his last jump. He got laid off and nobody hired him after that. The word kind of got out.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Isn't that, that's a lesson, kids, right there. Yep. Uncle Len's lesson for the day. Actually, that's a good lesson. Number three on here, new business formations have declined dramatically. Historically, the formation of new small businesses has been a major force for job creation, but in recent decades, new business formations have been in a steady and dramatic decline. The number of new business formations declined from more than 550,000 in 1978 to fewer than 150,000 by 2012. Entrepreneurialism was once the economic backbone of America, the small shopkeeper, the farmer, and the tradesman. But today it seems like a historic novelty as more people pursue jobs in government and corporate America. Paula, new business formations down. That's also surprising.
That surprises me a lot, and I would want to fact check that and look for, I would want more information about that before I were to believe it, because it seems as though startup culture is rampant. It seems as though entrepreneurialism in the U.S. is healthier than ever. It's sexy now, right?
Well, like, you follow that. Look at his fourth point on here. His number four point, Paul, is the rise of the solopreneur. The combination of the internet and the high cost of doing business is producing a higher number of solo entrepreneurs or solopreneurs. Instead of operating a business and hiring employees, the entrepreneur instead works alone. That sounds like a Paula. Well,
but so here's the thing. I don't see how the rise of the solopreneur would necessarily tie in with reasons why you're not making more money. Because if you have a greater number of people who are becoming self-employed, who are becoming solopreneurs, and they may not be hiring employees, but they're hiring other contractors, freelance contractors, to assist with various aspects of their business, then that entire web of solopreneurs who are providing services for other solopreneurs, each person within that web would be making more money, theoretically.
Yeah, I don't think so, though. OG, turning to you, you know, you and I started off our first blog forever ago, and it just seemed like when we entered this space versus just the financial planning space that you and I were in, the downward pressure, because there's so many solopreneurs, like the ability to pay people less seems to be so much easier, I guess, as an employer. It's so much easier to pay people less online than it was when I was a financial planner.
I don't know that that's the case, but I'm going to take what you have here and kind of run with it and combine maybe a little bit what Paula was saying here. Maybe your income is not increasing, but the cost of doing business is decreasing. And therefore, you're kind of staying the same and or netting out more things. And what I mean by that is this. Let's say that you worked at an architect firm in town and you got to drive to work and buy work clothes and eat out for lunch with your colleagues three times a week and so on and so forth. And you quit and you now run your own business. And maybe there's a little bit of pressure on being a little bit lower cost provider or something like that. But now you can swap out your car for a bicycle because you don't actually have to go anywhere because you're working from home, or you don't have to have expensive clothes anymore because you're not seeing clients in the office and you don't have to go to lunch. So is it maybe a little bit of a, we're still doing better, but this one metric of income is different?
Income staying the same, but expenses are down. You buy that, Paula?
No, not. I mean, I don't.
I thought I had one.
Because you have other expenses. You have expenses that people didn't have in the 1980s, hosting, email lists.
But to OG's point, not that he needs backup, because he really doesn't. But the cost of hosting is nothing versus the cost of the suit that you no longer have to wear. Like when I was...
If you have a sufficiently large audience, we're talking thousands of dollars per year. I mean, I just ran the numbers on just my hosting plus ConvertKit, which is my email management software. Between just those two things, I'm paying about $7,000 a year. And granted, if I were to rent a brick and mortar establishment, sure, rent on that, depending on its location, would almost certainly be higher. But still, we're not talking about all of the software that I'm using for my business. We're talking about purely web hosting and the email list, $7,000 a year, just for those two things, not even counting the cost of running Facebook ads, the cost of software for managing Instagram, all of that.
Sure, but he was talking about a few seconds ago, there's not any shopkeepers anymore or farmers. I mean, in contrasting web hosting services, which, you know, I get it. I mean, it's expensive, but it's a lot less expensive than trying to employ 32 people to help you on the farm over the summer.
Or
buying a combine. My grandfather owned a printing company, and now most printing can be done on the internet and done instantaneously. Somebody's got the big printing, but I remember grandpa spending $60,000 on a printing press. You know, and that was in the, I don't know, 80s or early 90s. And now that thing might cost $100,000 if he was still doing it.
Which, by the way, is Kevin's fifth point on here. He says it's not a cliche. Machines are replacing people. That's exactly the point here. And by the way, if we can get rid of the hamsters that run the shortwave, like we got the cost of keeping those things
running. Pay them less.
We should pay them less.
Give them less with that little juice thing that they drink out of.
Based on this piece, I mean, we're overpaying the hamsters.
But somebody's getting overpaid based on this piece. I'm not sure.
But Paula, do you believe this? Machines replacing people?
For certain specific tasks, yes. But we also need people who can program and maintain the machines. developers.
Doesn't that feel like a race to you? Like, we need people to stay on top of the machines, but we need fewer people this year than we needed 2 years ago to stay on top of the machines.
I think what it is jobs that do not require a lot of training, jobs that can easily be replaced by machines, are being replaced. But specialized jobs for which we do not have machines that are advanced enough to be able to do them, jobs that require the exercise of judgment and critical thinking and human discretion, those are not yet being replaced and probably will not be for decades.
Listen to me do this, guys. And to Paula's point, John.
Oh.
To Paula's point, Len, when she talks about the certain type of jobs, I remember, Len, walking into a factory with my dad when I was 10 years old. He worked for General Motors, and that factory was full of people. I went with him a couple of years ago back to a General Motors factory where now he works as a consultant, getting back to the earlier thing that we talked about. And he's showing me around the factory, and Len, this floor is nearly empty. I mean, just almost completely robots and people maintaining robots. Is that what you see where you're at?
Yeah, well, automation has been, you know, it's not like this is a new thing. If you think back even to the 1800s, machines have been replacing people for a long, long time. I mean, look back to the cotton gin, for example, or railroads, and machines are always replacing people. But
Those things replaced horses, Len.
Oh, okay. You're right, horse. Yeah, but then you had the people that had to take care of the horses, right? Yeah, you had a whole industry of the horse taking care of the horses.
Buggy whip makers.
Yeah, see, I saved that one. I saved that last minute save. Thanks, stick save. But seriously, it seems more widespread now. Especially like when you go into a fast food restaurant. I mean, they have kiosks that are now taking your orders. They have machines that are making the burgers. I went into the airport at Newark. Has anybody ever been to Newark Airport, New Jersey?
Have. Yeah,
not on purpose.
Okay. This was a couple of years ago, and it really was staggering. When I was walking through the terminal there, every restaurant, even the bars, had ordering kiosks on every table.
Yeah,
there were
iPad.
No waiters or waitresses anywhere. There was one, like these bars, there was a big old long bar, one bartender, and everybody would put their orders in at the bar, and it would all go automatically. I mean, it was just incredible how few people were working there.
And not to make this a crabby old guy podcast, Len, but didn't you hate that? Because I hated it.
Yes, I absolutely hated it. It was just, it really was. That's the first place I was at where I was like, oh my God. I mean, we are really, it's really getting surreal. That's the only way I could say it.
I'm going to move past a few of these because he has several more points. I want to drop down to number 11. Let me go through these, though, for people just following along at home. And we'll link to them on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Number 7 is importing of workers, basically saying that in the United States, importing people from other countries who will do the work for less money than people in the U.S. are willing to take as a wage. We could probably spend a day talking about just that point alone. Number 8, serial economic crises and the happy to have a job syndrome, where you should just be happy to have a job, and the unspoken threat that you could just as easily be jobless. Number 9, online job boards, making it easier for employers to find somebody who will undercut you on your wage. Number 10, bogus inflation statistics. Once again, another entire podcast on how inflation statistics, not what you think they are. I totally agree with that one, but that's a whole different page. But I want to get down to number 11. No shortage of college-educated workers. In 1970, 1 in 7 U.S. adults held college degrees. Today, it's 1 in 3. That means the percentage of Americans with college degrees has more than doubled in the last 50 years. As much as we're being fed the narrative that we need more education to compete, the reality is there's no shortage of college-educated workers. This helps to explain why an unusual number of college grads are working at Starbucks or driving for Uber. By at least one estimate, 34% of college-educated workers are underemployed working in jobs that don't require college degrees. Paula, you agree with that sentiment?
Oh, that's definitely true. I mean, when everybody, scarcity is what leads to value. When everybody has something, then it's no longer a rare resource. And so I think that this mythology that we feed people, that you need to go to college in order to get a good job, is detrimental to a lot of people. I mean, certainly if you want to become a dentist, then yes, there's a certain type of schooling that you're going to need. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with going to a vocational school or a trade school and becoming a plumber or an HVAC technician or an electrician. And so to discourage people from that and to make it sound as though they would have a better shot at life by getting a humanities degree rather than becoming an electrician, I think is a disservice to both parties. Now, there's nothing wrong with getting a humanities degree. I'll spare you from the angry emails. But
thank you. Email Paula at affordanything.com.
Oh, good. That's the email address I never check. That's so sure.
Fantastic. See, that's what I was setting it up. I was just,
woo!
Yes.
You know, I have a sociology degree. I have never used specifically that degree. Certainly, I got things out of my liberal arts education that I've applied to my adult life. But would I ever tell somebody, oh, don't go, somebody who actually wanted to become an electrician or a plumber or an HVAC technician, would I ever tell them, oh, no, don't do that. Your future will be much better if you got a sociology degree. Right. No, of course I'm not going to say that.
No, that's my English degree, too. I mean, I think my English degree has done a lot for me, but I, yeah, the same.
Yeah, you speak English fluently, Joe.
I bespeak English fluently, if you want to put that correctly, Paula. Come on.
By the way, in case anyone was wondering, the Oregon Trail was developed in 1971.
That was either the actual Oregon Trail or the video game?
The Oregon Trail video game was developed in, first game was originally developed in 1971, and it was developed by a high school senior. Yeah. Imagine that.
Paula's saying, imagine a high school senior in 1971. They had that back then?
Imagine building a game like the Oregon Trail before you're old enough to legally vote.
I know. Isn't that cool? Some of these video games now that are just beautiful and have one person working on it, or two or three, is amazing to me. I love what he does with this at the bottom, though. Let's cut to the chase here, OG. He says, where do we go from here? He said, I just provided an exhaustive list of reasons why you're not making more money. But the real issue is, where do we go with this? And assuming that you agree with any of this at all, there's all these reasons people had that you're being held down. I love that he ends this piece with, you know what? You still got to find a way.
Got to make it happen. If you want to make a change, go make a change. You know, whether that's something as drastic as moving across country or changing careers altogether, there's always something to do, right? There's always something that you can do to improve your situation. And a lot of time people talk about working on expense payoff, right? How do I eliminate my expenses or live very frugally or something like that? I was talking to a client earlier today and I was asking him about his budget for planning purposes. And he says, well, you know, here's how much I spend, but you know, I could really cut that back if I needed to. I said, you already have a really aggressive savings goal. You don't have to, you know, kill yourself to make it even more aggressive. We can work on bonuses and we can work on adding income to the top line. And that's what this is about. You know, go make it happen.
Paula, he talks about spending plans, saying they should be based on the most conservative income numbers because he says there's all these things working against you. So in your spending plan, just be more conservative. Your expenses might end up being higher than you want them to be, and your income might be lower than you want it to be. So work with conservative numbers. I don't think that's ever a bad thing, is it?
Yeah, no, that's never bad advice. And I would say also, if you are a couple and you're making a major decision like purchasing a house, buy it based on the assumption that you might become one income one day. Because even if you don't plan on that, even if you plan on remaining as a two-income couple, at least then you have the flexibility to change.
Yeah,
so much of financial planning is preserving flexibility.
Well, I love that because then something bad happens and you can breathe a sigh of relief knowing that things are still going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Len, you did this working for the man. He writes, work to broaden your income base. He says most jobs today, according to his 11 reasons here, are only going to pay so much. So look to earn money in several different ways in your time off.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can, if you have free time and you don't need a lot to earn a little extra money, you don't need a lot of extra time. But yes, it always helps to have that extra fallback in case you lose your job. You can never not have enough income. But let me go back to one thing he did mention, too, about having that spending plan.
Yes.
You know, and he's saying, well, if you lose your job and you might have to take a job that pays less. The only time that comes into real issues is if you're maximizing every last dollar you're making and you're spending it to pay all the bills. That's why it's important to not spend your entire income. You know, you got to hold back. So just make sure you don't spend to every last penny that you're earning. And if you do that, then you've already got your plan B. Then you can worry about plan C after that.
Yeah, love that. Last point on his list. starting some sort of side business should be a consideration. Avoid generalizations like, I'm not cut out to be self-employed, or I've never done that before. Anyone can become self-employed. It's just a matter of finding what it is you like to do or do best and monetizing it. You don't have to quit your job. A side business will work just fine. You agree with that sentiment, Paula?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, start with a side business and use that as your training ground, like test the waters while you're at your day job. And then you might end up just sticking with that and only that, which is awesome. Or you might end up deciding to go whole hog.
I remember OG talking about that same thing, talking about how by bootstrapping a business without going into debt, knowing a bunch of people a lot of money, it's a much safer way to start that side hustle than, you know, borrow money from mom, dad, Uncle Lou, whoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. A slow way of growth is just as good as, well, maybe it's not as good as fast way of growth. Fast growth would be way better.
And we're going to end it on that sage, conflicted, whatever advice, Roji. I think that's great. We're going to link to this piece on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Hey, before we head out to trivia land today, we have a brand new segment. Len, everybody thought that Paula was the deep thinker on this podcast.
What?
Well, I think she is.
Don't you think so?
Yes. But, I am.
Yes, but we have a new deep thinker on this podcast. Let's listen to our new segment.
Time for another deep thought from Doug. Do you ever wonder where bald people stop when they're washing their faces?
What's the answer?
I love how he's got like 4 minutes to think about that at the end. Like, Doug, that's the deepest thought you've ever had, pal. That's what do you think, Len? Where do you stop?
You know, I'm still trying to figure it out myself. I think it was when I get my shoulder up to a certain, I don't know. You know what? You're making my head spin already just thinking about it. I never really thought about it.
Paula, isn't that mind bending?
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I cede my crown.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I've been trying to read some good nonfiction lately. Gotta feed the noggin, right, kids? Well, after a few exhausting weeks of looking around, I finally found a book I'm interested in. And believe it or not, there actually is a good book without pictures. Who knew? To celebrate, here's today's trivia question. What year was J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit written? I'll be back with your answer right after this.
What is the score of this game? I think it's Paula 3, OG 2, Len 2. Isn't that right?
No, I had 3. I won last.
Oh,
last
you one. Did just win.
Yep. Yes, I did.
That's right. So OG has 2, Paula has 3. People have been asking when this game ends. We have no idea. Like, what score are we playing to? I don't know. Maybe it's the 2017 game. Maybe we play to the end of the year. But
you got to box this and give the home version out to your listeners, Joe. Yeah,
the home game. Yeah, that's fantastic. We'll make three.
Last.
Bucks. Right. Right. You
speed
know,
speed it along. Last.
By the way, the reason 12 on Kevin's list of reasons you're not making more money is because you're busy playing the home game of the Stacking Benjamin's trivia. That's exactly why. All right. OG said he's going last. Paula, you're second, which means do you want to go first or second? I already know the answer.
Second?
Yeah.
Second.
All right. So Len.
She asked it with a question. But yeah. Yes.
That is the correct answer. Len.
I was confused because you said, Paula, you're second. Do you want to go first or second?
Oh, and I'm sorry.
Like, you just said I was second.
Paula, you get to choose second, whether you go first or second. Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Listen to what I mean, not what I say. Come on. That's what mom always says. Len, so you're first. J.R.R. Tolkien wrote The Hobbit.
Yes.
Published.
And the question
it
is
here.
When it was written, when it was published.
Yes.
I think Led Zeppelin, they did a song, and I know they referenced some things in The Hobbit. So it's before the 1970s. And I know that read that in high school, and it was an old book then.
It's a damn good thing I went last.
You know what?
I think I'm confusing the Hobbit and what's the other kid's one?
Okay, I don't think he was, I don't think he wrote this in the 1800s. I think it was in the 1900s. I'm going to say 1932.
32 is Len's guess. Paula?
Wow. Jeez, I didn't think that it went back that far. I mean, as everybody knows, I'm very well versed in all pop culture related items. Movies, music, television shows.
Yeah, but this borders on your computer game nerdery. I mean, if you played fantasy games and you've read, have you read The Hobbit?
I have not read The Hobbit. No. I have read Harry Potter, and I've read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I've read some things in my day.
That's interesting. You read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and have not read The Hobbit.
That is correct. Yeah. I have not read The Hobbit. I have absolutely no clue. My initial knee-jerk reaction was I was just going to say 1971 because that's the year that the Oregon Trail was developed. But given that Led Zeppelin apparently referenced them and Led Zeppelin apparently was also big in the 70s, I'm beginning to worry that 1971 might be too late. So let's just go with 1957.
Sure. All right, OG. You're in the driver's seat, big guy. 32 and 57. What do you think?
Oh, goodness. I don't have any idea. So I'll say.
Did you read the book?
No.
Don't they make, you read this in high school anymore? Isn't that like one of the standard reading?
No.
Yeah. OG, no. It's like anymore? The hell are you talking about?
I'm making my sixth grader read Tom Sawyer, and he's less than impressed.
Oh, wow. Well.
That he's like, I don't understand what they're talking about. I said, you got to read it like, you know.
Yeah, that Mark Twain character. Meh.
Yeah, meh. So.
I could have
read Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I'm not going to.
He did write The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Nice.
Yeah, he has. No, he has.
Good work. Oh, he read it. I thought you said that Mark Twain wrote it.
Oh, he did not write it that way.
Yes. Once again, the he thing coming up. You said he, so.
It's a dangling modifier. Yes. Got it. Not to belabor the point. So we got 32-57. I'm going to split the difference and say 1944.
Well, as you already know, if you're in business, the right hire can make a huge impact on your business and its success or failure. And that's why it's so important to find the right person. But where do you find that individual? You could try posting on the job boards, but can you really be sure the right person sees your job? Instead, find the person who will help you grow your business with LinkedIn. It's the world's largest professional network. People go to LinkedIn every day to grow professionally and discover job opportunities. LinkedIn Jobs matches people to your role based on more of who they really are, their skills, their interests, and even how open they are to new opportunities. And this way, your job gets seen by more of the right people. 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there, and most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards, but 9 out of 10 members are open to new opportunities, so you can only reach them on LinkedIn. That's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn, and businesses rate LinkedIn 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. And I'll tell you one thing about hiring the right person. I was a guy who worked in training for a long time, and I found that a lot of companies go through employees very quickly. And if you spend more time choosing the right person and then training them effectively, your company's success will be much, much, much higher. The amount of money people spend correcting the wrong hire mistake is absolutely huge. And it's amazing how many hiring managers don't understand how crucial that step and then training them correctly. That is a 1-2 punch is in the success of your business. Go to linkedin.com/SB and get $50 off toward your first job post. That's linkedin.com/SB. For $50 off today, terms and conditions apply.
We're also excited that because it's Friday, that means it's Magnify Money Day. And it also is the day when we head to, and you hear me typing here, stackingbenjamins.com/Magnify Money, which is where you go when you're sick of just going to your local bank and saying, what have you got? And I really don't understand that in the age when we can go to the internet, number one, and then number two, to the place that has over 92% of all that stuff that's available in one easy to find place. Why wouldn't you head to Magnify Money? So I just went there. I put in compare the best offers for savings accounts, click that button, and guess what? We've got two different companies that are at 2.25%. We've got one at 2.11, one at 2.10, two of them at 2.05, one at 2.02, and then we've got a couple at 2%. And then it goes down from there. So we've got more creeping up. This is great news when it comes to savings. We had somebody in the basement asking about their favorite savings accounts, and Magnify Money's the first place that I would go because not only do I get the interest rate, but I also get their grade on the fine print score. I don't have a checking account or a savings account that has tons and tons of fine print, and Magnify Money even looks at that. But not only that, I'll tell you what else it means when interest rates go higher. That means it's harder to pay off debt because more of your interest is going to the man, which is why I like the 0% interest credit card, balance transfers. I really like some of the small business loans, the student loan refinance, personal loans. It's all here. Everything you'd need all in one place to compare, ditch, switch, and save and get the right financial products in your corner. StackingBenjamins.com/Magnify Money for more. All right, before we get to Doug and the answer, Len, this 1932, how are you feeling now that everybody's significantly later than you?
Well, I think Paul is flat out wrong because, like I said, when I read that book, I thought it had been around a while. So, I think I may be in trouble. So we'll have to see.
Paul, are you feeling flat out wrong?
I have no basis on which to make any type of judgment.
This is how wrong feels.
Yeah.
This is how melancholy.
It's so right.
I feel the way a person might feel if they were to have randomly thrown a dart at a list of answers.
Hypothetically.
And that dart landed on one of them.
Hypothetically speaking. And then, 1944, right in the middle of the war.
Well, not exactly in the middle, but...
But during.
Nearing its conclusion.
Yes, correct. All right, Doug, give us the answer, man. Put us out of our misery.
Welcome back, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I hate to be a big fat spoiler on this whole Tolkien thing, but I'm not sure how accurate this travel memoir really is. I've been looking at maps all day for this Middle Earth, and I see the Midwest and the Middle East, but unless I'm mistaken, I think he's making it up or something, because I personally seen a Razorback, and once I saw a Wienermobile with my own eyes, but an orc? This is getting hard to believe. Okay, but I promise trivia based on this book, so let's get your answer, which I know is accurate. What year was J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit written? The answer? While still read widely today, the book was written way back in 1937. Maybe that explains it. I'm not the best history student, but it appears whatever happened between 1937 and today sure has calmed the world down a lot, wouldn't you say? See ya!
Yes! Two in a row, baby!
Sweetness, my man.
My second answer was 39, but I still would have been over.
That's right.
What's interesting, Paula, is you read Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, and J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were good friends and actually wrote back and forth.
I saw you kind of, you know, hammering on that twice about, you know, and I think Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe was written in 39, I think, and that's why I was going to say 39.
Yeah, they kept.
But
they had a long line of letters back and forth that are pretty interesting.
They're like, "Hey, what about your mystical book? What right? What do you think about that one? Oh, I've got a great one. Mine's about going into a closet. Closet? That's really dumb. You'll never sell. Let me tell you about mine. That's stupid. Right, nobody's going to read that drivel.
Right. Yours is about a closet. Mine's about a short guy going off in the wilderness. Right. Hey,
who wants to play Dungeons and Dragons?
Hey, let's go do that now. Actually, we'll get to that in a second, because first we got this random call. Somebody actually called us, Len. What the heck were they thinking?
Somebody that was me
looking for a call for help. I can't believe it. This call for help is brought to you by...
No, I was heavy breathing. Oh, so I mistook it. Sorry.
Mine
was the heavy breathing call.
That was a whole different call. Brought to you by...
When you accident, that was a butt dial.
Yeah,
very inopportune.
My mistake.
This call for help brought to you by the Stacky Benjamins Tour. Join us live in Orlando.
Please join us live.
Coming up next Tuesday, we will be there.
Is that already happening?
OG... Me,
I'm busy.
And this person named Paula Pant is going to be on that show.
I am flying in early specifically so I can hang out with you crazy kids.
Len Penzo is not going to be there. What's up with that, Len?
I got work.
What?
He's like,
call the job.
I got crap to do.
Right.
Who still has those things? The vestige of the Hobbit era. Yeah.
Len's going, reason 13, you're not making more money. Because you're going to the Stacky Benjamins.
Only my job would be taken by a talking kiosk. Maybe one of these days.
Yes. He's hoping that happens on this show, where we get the computerized version of Len Penzo. Please, God, if the robots take me over on this one.
Dear Lord.
Today, our call for help comes from our friend Drew from Chicagoland. Say hi, Drew.
Hey, Joe and OG. I have a question regarding a 401k rollover. I recently switched employers 5 weeks ago, and so far I'm very happy with the transition. With my new compensation, I am able to more than double my 401k contributions, and I'm tracked to max out my new HSA while still maintaining the same take-home pay for my old job. My old 401k was through Merrill Lynch, and I was able to do a mixture of both traditional and Roth contributions. Luckily, my new 401k through Charles Schwab also has this option. According to the documentation I've received from Merrill Lynch, I have 4 options at my disposal. 1, keep the assets where they are. 2, roll them into some kind of IRA. 3, transfer the assets to my new 401k. Or 4, take some kind of cash distribution. With this in mind, here are my questions. Aside from these 4 options, are there any other options I should consider? 2, are there any time constraints that I should be aware of for this kind of rollover? And 3, what would you recommend I do with these funds? I've heard you repeatedly mention the benefits of keeping all my assets under one dashboard, so I'm leaning towards transferring the assets into a new 401k. I also don't have an IRA at this time and been meaning to get one up and running for a while. This seems like a great opportunity to get one started. Thank you for everything you do, and I appreciate not learning anything.
Fantastic. Thanks for the question, Drew. Len, we're going to start with you. Any other options than those that he mentioned that you can think of?
He could do nothing. And I mean that sincerely. I mean, you can sit there and not transfer anything if you don't want it. I wouldn't recommend that, but that's an option. So,
but if he's got great options where he's at and they'll let you stay, why not?
Yeah, that's true. I did mine. When I hopped companies, I transferred everything over. I didn't like having 2 separate 401ks, so I just rolled everything over into one single. And I liked it much better because I didn't like having to deal with 2 separate 401ks. But yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, well, let's find out. Paula, what's just you? What do you think? What should he do?
Well, he mentioned that the new 401k is at Charles Schwab,
yes,
which is a fantastic brokerage that has a lot of low-fee funds. So it seems to me as though consolidating everything under the Schwab umbrella gives you 2 benefits. It allows you to keep everything under one house, and that's a very, very good house.
OG, what do you think?
Really just boils down to a couple of different things to look at. First is the current plan and the existing plan. Is there any material differences between costs or available investment options? Assuming that the new plan has reasonable investment options and is structured in a reasonable cost structure, and also depending on the balance of the old one, I might just recommend putting it in the new 401k, because here's the thing. You can always take it back out again into another IRA. Likewise, you can put it in an IRA and take it back out and put it back into your 401k if you really want to do it. I'm a big fan of just kind of one place, and it's going to add some efficiencies. You're not going to have double trading costs if there are any. And the worst thing, and people swear that this not doesn't happen to them, but it happens to some people, where you forget about it. You know, if you work at a job for a year, you've got a little bit of a pension or a little bit of a 401k, and you forget, you don't do anything with it. 20 years goes by or 30 years goes by. I had a client that emailed me and said, hey, I got a letter from, you know, whatever company it was, and I don't know what it's about. It says something about they're supposed to be sending me $300 a month. And I said, well, did you work there? And he said, well, yeah, but back when I was 18 till I was 20, I mean, it was 40 years ago. I said, well, good thing they found you. You know, you're going to get $300 for the rest of your life. That's nice. So I just want it in one place. And unless there's some really big issue with the new plan, I'd probably just put it in there. And then if you ever want to take it back out again, you can.
I'll be the dissenting guy here then. I like rolling it to an IRA.
So basically, you get to pick anything. You can do, keep it where it is. You can move to the new one.
Open yeah. Up. Yeah. I mean,
how about
you could
cash?
Open like 12 new ones. Why yes. not have
why have one, Joe?
Well, here's the deal. You can use something like a personal capital to have it on one dashboard. When we said we like one dashboard, I don't think we meant have it all in one place. The thing that I don't like about most 401ks is that there usually is an Achilles heel. And if there is an Achilles heel, with the IRA, I can do whatever I want. So I can roll it wherever I want. And I can also then emphasize the funds that I don't get in the new 401k. And I can then have, I can overemphasize in the 401k what that 401k does well. And the areas they don't do well, I can have my IRA pick up the slack in those areas. So I can maintain good diversification. And by one dashboard, Drew, when I've said that in the past anyway, I didn't mean having it all in one place. I meant use something like a personal capital where you can look at all your stuff in one spot. There's so much technology out there today replacing people that we don't need anymore. Used to be that somebody would change those numbers every day on the internet for us. And now we have computers handling all that, and it makes it really easy. Only part of what I just said was true, but I think you get my point. Thanks for the question, Drew. If you've got a question, we did kind of say, do whichever one you want, didn't we? I mean, we have Len saying, move it to the new company. Well, actually, you guys all pretty much said, move it to the new company, except me. So I'll be the dissenter there.
Cash it out and have fun. You know, if the balance is under $1,000, you know what I say? Cash that baby out and go buy something cool. Go to like a really stupid steak restaurant, go get a big bottle of wine, just pick the most expensive thing you find on the menu.
Yeah, pay that penalty.
Live it up, baby.
Yeah.
Just put it all on.
It's 100. It's
just pretend
bucks.
There's 10% extra on all the on the menu
That's
items.
Right.
No, it's just $100. Go spend your $100, give it to Uncle Sugar, take your $900 that's left. I'll tell you, you can eat really good on $900. You'll never forget it.
That's the most confident advice you've heard on this show so far, right there.
It's legit is what it is.
If you've got a question for the show, head to stackybenjamins.com. At the top of the page, you'll see the questions for the show tab. Click that link and you'll see all the ways that you can be as cool as Drew and interface with us asking us
Did you forget the name of your own podcast?
What's
you play that?
That
back. It was like you paused there for like 3 seconds, didn't you? Put a, you know.
That's probably
listen to,
Where the heck are we? That's right. Well, I'm thinking about transitioning into Len about how awesome the LenPenzo.com blog is and asking you about what's coming up next on your show, on your blog. I don't know where I'm at. I got no idea.
Over at thepersistentitch.com.
Yes, that's what I meant to say.
It is that time again. It is the $40,000 challenge. I've got another Stacking Benjamins listener and awesome. Who has volunteered to show how they live on less than $40,000 a year. So that's Ryan from North Carolina. Stop on by.
I love that series, and that's really exciting. That another one of our listeners taking part in that. So head to LenPenzo.com and get that goodness. Paula, what's going on at Afford Anything?
On the Afford Anything podcast, we have an interview with Brian Portnoy, who is an investor who talks about how to make better decisions. So we're talking not just about investing, but about decision-making frameworks as a whole. I suppose that does sound deep thinky and nerdy, doesn't it? But it's quite good. It's one of my recent favorites. It's thinking about how to think.
Thinking.
So that's on
about your thinking.
Exactly. Metacognition, as they call it, as the kids call it these days. So that is on the Afford Anything podcast. Also, this dude named Joe shows up from time to time and he helps me answer listener questions. I don't know how he gets on the airwaves.
Crazy talk. We have so much fun.
Yeah, we do.
So fun. And that's at the Afford Anything podcast. Mr. OG, ready to take this show on the road? You got your suitcases packed?
Who's in charge of buying plane tickets? That's what I don't know.
The big question.
Am I supposed to get those? Or
I don't really care about that. Who's in charge of Doug? That's what I really want. Like, who's carrying the Doug leash?
Exactly. Well, what's frustrating is that, you know, I went through his travel plans with him. I said, hey, you know, I'm going to book these tickets. And he's like, no, I got it. You know, I'll just ask for reimbursement. And then he sent the reimbursement. I'm like, wait a second. What kind of tickets did you buy? And he said, Gulfstream, right? Isn't that what you said? We could take the Gulfstream? I'm like, no, dude. Commercial, basic economy. And then he said, you know, the part from Elf where the guy's coming in to give the pitch, he says, hey, I need an S500 to pick me up at the airport, black, tan interior, 72 degrees. I don't think he's kidding.
No.
With a big sign that says, Doug.
Orlando, wait till you see the diva in action.
You guys thought I was bad.
So in all seriousness, I have just discovered there's this company. It's called JetSuite X, and they fly between Las Vegas and a few select cities in California. And the tickets on those are like, if you buy at least a month or two in advance, actually incredibly cheap.
It's so good.
Ridiculously cheap. So I have joked for years about, like, I got to stop flying commercial. And when I saw JetSuite X, I was like, holy moly, I might actually start flying private for like $80 a ticket.
Yeah. No.
Wow.
It is fantastic. They've got
JetSmarters on the East Coast that goes from Miami to New York, basically. And there's some other cities they throw in there, too. There's some Dallas to Houston legs and that sort of thing.
Wow.
How great is that?
Wow. Like who knew?
The Uber for jets, right? And
Joe's making us drive the minivan.
Well, the Volkswagen van, right? So hope we make it. Orlando, we hope we see you next week. Doug, take it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
So what did we learn today? First, not making as much money as you'd like. Maybe times are tougher. But that's no excuse for not making it happen, people. Find a side gig, ask for a raise, whatever it takes. Only you can avoid being a statistic. Second, rolling over an old 401k, you have lots of options and they all might make sense. So how you handle that situation is based on your specific circumstances. The only option that most often ends poorly is to take it out and spend it. Yeah, avoid that. But the big lesson? Elves? Really, Tolkien? You expect us to believe elves exist? Wait a minute. Maybe that Will Ferrell movie documentary wasn't as off as I'd thought. Elves! Elves! There are elves living among us, people, and I, it turns out, have proof! Oh, it was right in front of me the whole time. Paula Pant appears courtesy of AffordAnything.com. Len Penzo appears courtesy of LenPenzo.com. This show was created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I just noticed it's just as dark and damp down here as Joe's soul. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks to the tall bearded guy in the pointy hat who warned me not to put on the ring I found inside the book. What was his name? Christopher Rudolph? Anyway, thanks anyways, dude. Big help.
Welcome to the after show, the part of the show that doesn't exist. We talked about J.R.R. Tolkien earlier. So my question for you all is about fantasy books or fantasy movies.
I'm not talking about that on the air. I don't talk to anybody about that.
It's a whole different subject.
Well, it starts when the pizza guy knocks on the door.
I thought this only happened to other people.
I know. You wouldn't believe what happened. So there I was minding my own business.
Yes.
The supermarket.
Yeah, right. Paula, what's your favorite fantasy novel?
Wait. Novel, I don't know. Does Game of Thrones count as a fantasy TV series? Would that?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Game of Thrones is a thing I've watched.
Yeah, but did you read the books?
Oh, you know, I tried. I really tried. I could not do it.
I went the other way. I couldn't watch the series because I'd read the books, and the first two episodes I lived through, and I'm like, you know what? This is just the same. And I've heard that they branched off since. But it was so like the books, but less dense that I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, I think they've branched off significantly since. I couldn't get through it. First, I'd gone pretty far within the episodes before I tried reading book one.
Oh.
And so I couldn't read book one because it was just too much of a step back in the plot line. So then I tried to jump a few books ahead and try to start picking up in the book series at around where the episodes were. But at that point, the plot had diverged enough that the books no longer made sense.
Had no idea where the hell you were.
Yeah. So it just didn't work. Reading the books just didn't work for me.
But Game of Thrones is so good.
It's amazing. In fact, one of my favorite YouTube channels, this is a channel called Alt Shift X, where he just does Game of Thrones analyses. He's amazing. He has the best voice. That guy needs a podcast.
Cheryl talks about when I was reading The Red Wedding in the books. And for those of you that don't know what The Red Wedding is, I'll just say this. I literally, we're sitting reading next to each other in bed. I took my book and I threw it across the room. Like I just chucked it. I was so pissed. He'd already killed off like every character I liked before that. And then The Red Wedding happened. And anyway, Len, how about you?
You know what? I don't read a lot of fantasy books, so I guess I'd have to just say...
Did you read The Hobbit?
Yeah, but I mean, there's not a lot of them, so yeah, I mean, that's up there. I guess it's not really fantasy, but I keep... The Lord of the Flies keeps coming.
Who cares about Lord of the Rings?
I really enjoyed The Lord of the Flies, but I don't know if that counts as a fantasy. It's fantastical. It's not... Yeah. True, but it's, you know, it's not like in the vein of The Hobbit or you know, the Harry Potter books or something like that. But yeah, that I guess that's it. I am not a big fiction book reader. I like nonfiction books. That's what I read. So
the older I've gotten, the more I've read nonfiction, the less I've read fiction. And yeah,
that's me. I'm a nonfiction book reader.
I think part of it's the nature of my job, you know? I mean, just reading so much nonfiction all the time.
All of this is this is fiction. Yes. So much fantasy that you have to go back to reality.
I have to. Oh, gee, you don't do fantasy.
You already knew the answer to this. Yeah. I don't do sci-fi. On occasion, I'll catch a sci-fi movie, but me no read...
Any of the fantasy books you like?
I've never read a single one, probably. Name some.
Well, you haven't read The Hobbit. You haven't read The Lord of the Rings. But have you seen the movies?
Nope.
Didn't see the movies. No. Mm-hmm. What about
Harry Potter books?
Harry Potter?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. Does Star Wars count? I've seen all the Star Wars movies multiple times.
You know one that was hilarious, and I saw the movie multiple times.
Spaceballs? No, that's a different thing.
And then I read I read the book after I watched the movie several times. But The Princess Bride, the movie's fantastic. The book is five times better.
How about, it was just on the other day, and I caught probably the last two-thirds of it with my kids. And they're like, this is a great movie.
What's that, you know, Princess Bride?
Yeah, Princess Bride.
Yes.
So, Inigo Montoya?
Yes.
Do you know who that character is, like who he is in real life, like who the actor is? This is gonna blow you up too.
I do, and I'm not gonna get it.
It's Saul from Homeland.
Yes. Yes.
Like.
Yes.
Holy cow! Like that movie. Yes. It's so old now.
Yes.
I mean, he was, you know, Saul's an old guy, but so yeah, I watched that movie, if that counts. But Star Wars. Oh, here's the last.
Well, hold on before you get too far away from Princess Bride. That whole "My name's Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die."
Right.
The book actually has a whole chapter about how the dude killed his dad, and mm-hmm. it's every bit as funny and as fun as the rest of the whole story. It's it's fantastic.
I can't remember the name. This isn't a fantasy thing. It's more apocalyptic. Does that count? Probably not.
No.
I can't remember the name of that movie either, but I read the book first and then saw the movie.
Did he say, I read a book and I saw a movie, I don't remember the name, and that's what we just talked about?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was, well, anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah.
What is it? I want to know.
Oh,
I do read apocalyptic books, fiction. I read The Road. The Road's very good.
Len's like, apocalyptic stuff.
Did you like it? I read The Road. I actually read that last year. Very good book.
They made it a movie and Charlize Theron was in it and Viggo Mortensen.
I read the book. I didn't see the movie.
Is it the one where he has to like take his kid on a really long trip?
Yes, he has to. Yes, there's a nuclear yes. war, yes. and yes,
yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty crazy. But yeah, I'm with Len. I do all nonfiction history books. I like reading about presidents. I like reading about specific events, like in deep.
Paula, Princess Bride.
Princess Bride was a good movie. I saw it in high school. In fact, I saw it because a friend of mine insisted that I see it, because when she discovered that I hadn't, she was like, all right, you're coming into my house. You're going to see
this. Drop everything. Get a bottle of wine. We're watching this movie. Yep.
Yeah. So I did see The Princess Bride in high school and I did enjoy it, although I kind of think it's overrated.
Oh, my. Oh, that's
a fail at.
I know. Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout-out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout-out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership, and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.